Hi, this is filmmaker BJ Colangelo, and you're listening to The Default Setting with Jess Falstick and Gigi Chick, presented by Above Below Entertainment.
To the default setting, we find out what makes you tick because we have ways of making you talk. I'm your host, Jess Falstick.
And I'm co-host Gigi Chick.
And today's guest is a shocking comedian friend of mine, Ms. Elizabeth Seaman. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
Woo!
I like to call her Lizzie Jizzy because her name's Elizabeth Seaman.
Oh, how endearing.
Right?
Right? It's yeah. So affectionate.
I mean,
so affectionate.
Well, my favorite thing is the first time I met her, I was like, is it pronounced semen? Because it was written down.
Yeah.
She's like, yep, that's how
a valid
you say
question.
It.
But it was good because I feel like you did that. And then that was the second time I'd ever done comedy.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, that'll like help relaxing because I can start off like, I could just riff a little, like, thank you so much for asking.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't ask.
Yeah. Because
they're, like, afraid to say it wrong. So, like, I always had, like, teachers who'd be like, is it semen? Like,
semen?
So yeah,
they're
so
like,
now I use that as
don't
good
make
intro.
Me say it.
Yeah, they're like,
just say your name.
Right, like, I feel like they didn't want to embarrass me by saying my name wrong, even though that is
saying it correctly.
Way, yeah.
Yeah.
That is the right way to say it. But I, like, appreciate the tentativeness, I guess.
Yeah, that they're not just going to jump right in and be like, semen! Like, yeah. just they want to make sure.
Hey, why not? I would do it.
Polite, yes, yeah, semen!
But at the same time, I'm so used to it, it's just like, yup.
Well, that's the thing too. I didn't even realize like when people do roll call, sometimes they just yell last name. So it's like semen.
I had a teacher in high school.
Aaron.
Yeah, I had a teacher in high school who called everyone in our class by their last name except for me. And I'm like, you know, it's real obvious. It's pretty obvious.
Well, then people who don't know are like, oh, she must have like a really difficult last name.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's just dirty. Just a dirty thing.
Just too dirty.
So, Elizabeth, your default setting is depression.
Yeah, I feel like I had to get on that one before all the other comedians did. I'm like, somebody is going to snatch that.
Well played. Well played.
So, like, the fact that it hasn't happened yet, I was kind of shocked.
Well, and that was really smart of you because I think a lot of people just think, like, and it's weird how it's worked out so far because I'd say we have at least, God, probably 10. This is our 11th episode.
Yeah. Oh.
And we have 11 episodes in the bag so far. And at no point has anyone suggested a topic that has overlapped, which I guess 11 episodes in, it's not improbable. But you would think like a lot of people have the same sort of default, which is depression, anxiety, insecurities, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And really everyone, when they've come to me with their idea about what their default setting is, has been exclusively unique to like, even if there are a lot of relative things, like Amber was on the show and she talked about being a perfectionist and Ginger was on the show and talked about being self-critical.
Mm-hmm.
And while those two things are very similar, when they pitched it to me, that's how they pitched
they
it to
me. They
all
kind of had different stories behind them, like completely
exactly,
unique.
Exactly. Yeah. So while there was like things, there were elements of perfectionism with self-critical or elements of self-critical with perfectionism, it was still, when they pitched it, it wasn't even like, well, let's call it this instead so that it'll be more unique. That was just literally how they pitched it to me. Which I find so interesting is that so far, and even like I've got another 10 episodes lined up beyond this with people who have talked about what they want their default setting to be, and none of them have been depression, none of them have been anxiety, none of them have been any of the topics that we've talked about so far. So I think it's really interesting how people all have sort of their unique thing that, you know, I feel like everyone can relate to the shit that we talk about, but at the same time, everybody has like a core thing that maybe is a lot more unique than you think it would be.
And I think it's interesting because I feel like maybe a lot of times they're talking about like, it's, I don't know, it made me wonder if I should talk about this one because I was thinking like, oh, I don't know if it's like unique enough. It's like too much of like an umbrella type thing because it affects something. I'm like, crap, maybe I should do something more creative.
But it's your specific experience with it too, which is what I'm sort of interested to learn. Because I know, like me personally, I was diagnosed with depression. A lot of my friends have been, woo, high five.
Depression five.
Depression five.
Pass me the cookies.
This is going to be, oh yeah. She brought the most amazing cookies. It is Valentine's Day. This is going to air at like Easter, but like it's Valentine's Day today. And she brought these, they're not shortbread. You said they're what?
They're French sable cookies. Oh my God. French butter cookies.
They're little hearts with like chocolate drizzle and they look amazing.
Be jealous of what I'm chewing right now.
I'm going to have to hit those in a minute. This is going to be the most like happy, upbeat, laughing story on depression that anyone has ever heard. Like, we're going to talk about depression. And that's just going to be,
it's pretty funny sometimes.
With the big ass chunk of chocolate in the middle.
Well, normally you put like the sparkling sugar on it, like the specific kind, like you brush it with an egg white and put the sparkling sugar on it. But I didn't have any anymore because I didn't have it. And I'm like, chocolate.
Holy fucking shit. These are good.
It's amazing. Thank you.
Okay, I'm glad they're like,
if I had some coffee right now, it'd be like the only thing that's better than this.
Oh, yeah. I love coffee. Cookies. Maybe not necessarily more than beer, but this beer that you had is very good.
I'm like channeling Cookie Monster. I'm like,
Just open your throat. Let it all slide down.
Eat it like a duck.
Yeah. So it's okay. We're talking about depression. Just eat all your feelings.
Yeah, it's true.
When you have them.
Yeah. Right. But it's funny just because I think we've talked about this as related to other issues like being self-critical and perfectionism, just how many people are diagnosed with varying degrees of things that are similar to depression that they medicate for and all that kind of stuff. So, but, you know, everybody has their very unique experiences, whether it's just strictly like something that they inherited or they went through an experience that triggered it or all that kind of stuff. So let us begin. So as you mentioned, depression is a very large, broad sort of topic. Mm-hmm. As it relates specifically to you, can you kind of summarize, like, is it something that's always existed with you or it's been such an omnipresent thing or?
I would say it's probably always kind of been around, but maybe I didn't know that that's what it was yet. You know, like, so I remember being like, 7 and my parents were putting me to bed and I would just randomly freak out because I'm like, if they leave this room, they're gonna die. Aww. And you know, and I would just be like freaking out. Like I'm sobbing and I don't want them to leave my bedside for something. So I'm like, what 7-year-old is freaking out about everybody dying?
Me.
Depression.
I did it too. Well, and the thing was, and this is gonna sound really fucking like dumb, but I also watched Bambi when I was that age, and then I was convinced.
Didn't we all?
Yeah, I was convinced my mom was going to go out sometime and never come home.
Oh, yeah, that was one of my biggest fears. Yes, I had a nightmare growing up. That was my first nightmare I really remember, is my mom, hang with me here, marrying a monkey and running away with him.
I mean, that's
dad claims it was symbolic for just him. That was the monkey was him.
I fucking hate monkeys.
But I was really? Like, that's I terrible. Woke up and was so depressed and upset. And like, I feel like I've always had this thing about fear of like people, like someone leaving me, like choosing to leave me.
Yeah, definitely. Like abandonment issues. Abandonment.
It's weird. Like my parents never did that. It's just.
Yeah, I was like the inherent same way. In me. Like people are just going to leave or they're going to die. And then you're going to be like, well, I'm here alone. I think too, like when I was a kid, I'd watch Disney movies.
Yeah.
And I was like overly empathetic. Like there's no reason to be so like I'd watch Alice in Wonderland and I would freak out because I'm like, the flowers are so mean to her.
Oh,
like,
no.
She's just trying to get
take
home.
Care
and
of her.
I was lost and they were trying to help me get home and they were being mean. Like, why? Like,
that's a really great point. Like, I remember just feeling like she was getting bullied all the time in that movie by everyone. Like, everyone was being
enjoyable.
An asshole. Yeah. No, that's a great point. So,
it's like the movie could have been over in 10 minutes if someone would just helped her.
Yeah. Like, just fucking help. Stop giving her shrooms and edibles and just fucking
show up. Everyone's really mean.
Stop being weird and disappearing and smoking your hookahs and whatever the hell else was going on in that movie.
I did not like it.
Yeah. So was that the first time you really remember something that was sort of markedly like...
Yeah, I think that's the first time if I'm thinking back of like the times I would think of something that maybe wasn't normal kind of sadness for like a kid to have an existential crisis.
Did your parents
about everyone dying?
Yeah, did your parents feel concerned about it at all? Or were they just kind of like, it's a phase?
I mean, I'm one of 4 kids, which is not to say that my parents were like too occupied or anything like that. But, you know, some kids are, and I'm one of the kids in the middle. I'm the second oldest, so... you know, maybe it was kind of like, maybe they just need more attention right yeah. now or something.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they were concerned so much as maybe they thought I was just kind of a difficult kid.
Sure, yeah. Well, like, and it's hard to tell.
This kid is emotional AF.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
She needs to take it down a couple notches. Right.
So then, like, get it, as you got older, was it still kind of about abandonment issues, or did it morph a little bit into other things, or?
I think part of it was still about abandonment issues. Because I remember even when I was 13, I got so nerd. I like Lord of the Rings, and I was watching the special
yes.
for Return of the King. And you watched the one about the kid who had cancer, and how they wrote the song.
Yes.
From the yeah, and they talk about this kid who had cancer, and then he dies. And it was like 2 a.m. And I had, this is back in the day, I had my own little personal like DVD player.
Oh, okay.
So I'm watching like the specials on my dad's extended version because he's like a big nerd. So we had all the DVDs. And then I just freaked out. Like my grandma had died not that long before. Okay. And then I just had like an absolute meltdown about everyone I know and love dying.
Aww.
But it's like, it doesn't make any sense.
Those movies
like,
are intense though.
Well, like, oh, the kid is living his dream and he made the thing and Peter Jackson believed in him. And, like, it was just, and then I'm like, and that's why everyone you know and love is going to die.
Yeah, that realization.
And just leave you alone.
The worst. Yeah. Do you have things that, like, are triggers that make it, like, make that feeling worse sometimes than others? Or is it just kind of always there and doesn't really fluctuate? And
well, okay, so when I was, like, a young teenager, it was still, like, the abandonment issue stuff. And then other times I feel like it's like depression and it mixes with anxiety for sure. Cause, I even like when I was in high school, I had like this really good group of friends and I loved them. And then sometimes I would just be like so down for no reason. And then I started to get into like self-harm stuff for a while because I'm like, it hurts in my head. So I'm going to make it hurt somewhere else okay. that I can like understand.
Okay.
So I was doing that for a little while. And then when I went to college, it was pretty bad, too.
Yeah.
Because I think I probably came off like I was really, like, kind of, like, socially awkward. It just felt like I was just, like, in, a panic all the time. Like, just social situations and, yeah. like, making me, like, super nervous.
Sure.
And I just get kind of, like, sweaty. And I just did – I'd have to call my poor mom. I had to call her all the time. And she'd have to give me pep talks to go feed myself.
Oh, my gosh.
She'd be like – okay, you need to go to the cafeteria.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't want to go to the cafeteria by myself. I don't want to go. And yeah. then people are, everyone's going to be staring. Like, I'm just convinced that everything I did, people are staring at
me.
I've been meaning to work on a bit about my anxiety when it comes to, like, going places.
Because,
like, in a classroom, I used to, like, plan out, like, how I'd get to the tissue box or something. Because I got a big ass, okay? I've got a big butt, and I'm short. So it's like, it's going to hit
Fortunately, those
everything.
Are in right now.
It's going to knock off things from everyone's desk. And I just, like, sit there in the back of the room and just freak out. I'm like, I really need a tissue.
Could someone get me a
but
tissue?
I can't figure out, like, a good path without, like, knocking
the
someone's
path of least destruction.
Desk.
Oh, my
yeah,
God.
So it's kind of like that feeling, but I would get it all the time. And yeah, it was.
You said you had, when it got later into like your teens and in high school, you had a lot of bad feelings in your head. And you mentioned a group of friends. Were they the ones that sort of caused that or supported you through it or?
Oh, no, they were awesome. Like my high school friend, I'm still really good friends with like all of them. Anya, actually.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's right.
She's one of my friends from high school.
Fellow comedian Anya Horning.
Hi, yeah. Hi, Anya. So I like, they were great. Like, they were amazing, and I feel like that was probably the only reason that high school...
You got through
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I loved high... I went to an all-girls Catholic school.
That's right!
And I loved high school.
Okay.
It was the best.
It was around here?
Yeah, name drop it. It's St. Joseph Academy in Cleveland.
Okay.
Gotcha.
On Rocky River Drive.
Okay.
So it's kind of like the West parking place.
And so your friends... Did you talk to your friends at all about what you were going through with that stuff?
Kind of. I think that they just didn't really get it. Because I would, like, oh, maybe it'd be a party and we'd be, like, drinking. And then all of a sudden they'd be like, I cut myself. And you know, like, something really weird.
It would just come out.
Yeah, like, all of a sudden that's when I chose to tell people. Because I'm like, inhibitions are gone. Now I'm going to ask for help. It's like, well, being drunk is not the time to ask for help.
Sure.
And granted, I think that was more like the very end of high school, like, the beginning of college. Because I like, stopped cutting myself when I was, like, 18. Which I'm like, woohoo, like going up on my like 11-year anniversary of not having cut myself anymore, which is awesome. I don't know if my parents want to know that.
Did your parents never find out that you did that?
You know what? I really don't know, because I think I wasn't super secretive about it.
Okay.
But they got divorced when I was like 11 or 12. So, you know, the bouncing back and forth. And like I said, I've got three siblings. So there was a lot going on.
Yeah, yeah. When did you start self-harm stuff?
I think it was probably maybe around when my parents were getting divorced. So maybe like 13.
Okay. And did it start with cutting right away, or did you escalate to that?
I think maybe I escalated, because it would be weird things. And that's how I know. I'm like, this isn't normal. Like, I learned later, like, this really isn't just a thing people do because they talk about it in emo songs. Mm-hmm. Which is another reason why I think maybe, especially around that time, which was like the early 2000s and whatnot, people were like, emo is really in, and that's just what people do. Like,
does emo music really get people? Because that's the thing. I've heard numbers of women talk about, like, how problematic emo music was for, like, women back in the day.
It was pretty, like, let a bro come and save you from this, like, douche you're dating, so they can be the hero. Like, her life's so terrible, and I'm gonna save her. Like, okay.
It was very much music that fed into the feelings you were already having.
Yeah.
It was like hyper, it was making you very like hyper aware of like what you wanted to do and like the anger/angst you had and like depression.
And I mean, that music always existed.
It made it sound beautiful and like okay to express. And like
really like romanticized.
You wanted a guy who was going to sing for you like that, but then you didn't have him, and that made you more depressed.
It was like a
spiral.
Evanescence song up in
the oh my God. The other day, so I've been listening to all these old episodes of This American Life, and they were playing, it was from like 2006, and they were playing, what's that fucking Evanescence? No, it was like the sad piano Evanescence song.
Yeah,
it's the one where she's like walking around and her like wrists are all bandaged up because you're cutting yourself.
Seriously, in the video?
No, she's walking around with bandages like hanging off her wrist.
Oh my God.
In a dress, and you know, she's got like the long black hair and everything because there were. So I don't think that the music necessarily made me do that, but I think
it didn't help.
I think it was more like because that was what was popular, it didn't, maybe my behavior
it seemed more
wasn't
acceptable.
Like a warning sign.
Oh, that was just kind of like the thing you did.
Yeah, it was kind of like, oh, she's just trying to be cool.
Was it like Wake Me Up or whatever?
So Wake Me Up was like, wake me up inside. But then there was like a sad ballad one. It was like, I'm so tired.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I know.
I can't think of it.
Won't leave I know we have the me technology. Alone.
These words won't seem to heal.
This pain is
just too real. There's just too much the time cannot erase. I'm sure people are tuning in for this.
Oh, yeah, they just
find away all of your fears.
Was it like My Immortal?
Yes! Oh my god, that's gonna drive me crazy.
Because
I don't think she ever
says
it in the fucking
song. It's like about killing herself. It's like, ooh, hot lady with all the bandages on her. She fucking kills herself, and it's fine.
My god. I remember the thing with Evanescence, and I've actually heard this about Imagine Dragons and a bunch of other bands, is that they're like allegedly like subtexty Christian, but they didn't want to be like over the top about it. Because I guess if you're like Christian-y, it's easier to break into like mainstream pop rock sort of like, because you can somehow bypass you get on like a Christian label or something. I don't know, like
that was also a time when like Christian poppy sad music was POD popular too.
Creed. Even bands like Switchfoot
they were Christian
and stuff like that. I mean, they were like all Christians, but they weren't like in a Christian category because they didn't want to be, though. They were just kind of like, no, we just
like, no, we're
it's funny though, just because like I'm not that much older than you guys, but I think I was in a different generation of music. So you talk about emo, and I remember emo, but it was like, I was already in my like
you weren't at the My
mid-20s.
Chemical Romance concert.
Yeah, I was in my mid-20s at that point, so I was kind of
brand
over.
New.
Like, I mean, I listened to Simple Plan and Good Charlotte, but I didn't really,
I was totally
it didn't
that
speak
too.
To me like on a teenage level.
Yeah.
So when shit was speaking to me on a teenage level, it was like Nirvana and Nine Inch Nails and Soundgarden. And that shit was still very much like, that stuff was like still very much like Kill Yourself, but it was very like it was very much, you had to read between the lines of like the depression and the angst.
It wasn't as heavy handed.
Yeah. And the thing is, I'm actually thankful for that filter. Because it was so yeah. like, that was more of like an existential, like everything sucks.
Yeah.
Whereas if they had actually, as opposed to with like, emo, when they started talking about like relationships and some guy, like that shit would have spoken to me on like so many levels. And I probably would have cut myself or done something terrible because I was 13, I didn't understand like what drain you was supposed to mean. Like, so I just didn't get any of that shit. So did you say you started with cutting, or did you start with like, cause a lot of people do like rubber bands and shit like that.
Well, I had like done cutting. I had like scratched up the back of my hand real bad one time. I had like a candle in my room and it had broke. And so there was like the glass case that it was in, there's like a shard of it. And I'm like, why did I challenge myself to like rub my finger on like across it until I cut myself? Like all of a sudden it was like, well, if you're like not serious or something, then you won't like do it. I don't know. That's like the stupidest challenge ever. Like, oh, you want to be legit about what?
I don't know. Yeah, I get what you're saying. So because I want to understand more about it, does it temporarily feel cathartic to physically hurt yourself? Okay.
Yeah, it was definitely like, I don't, like, you can be feeling real like stupid in your brain, and because depression is, it's so many things, and a lot of it, it's just like you hate yourself. And well, my point of view is, I can't say what everyone's depression story is, but mine is just like, you know, you're worthless and nobody likes you, and you're just gonna die alone. Like not die alone. Like I'm never gonna get married.
Right.
But it's more like, and then your family's gonna everybody die. Everybody dies alone. They're the only one who just puts up with you.
Yeah.
And it's because your family. You know, like
yeah.
It was just like I can be so mean to myself. I call myself so non depressed. I call myself a garbage person.
Everybody does.
I'm like, no, you're just like a piece of trash. Yeah. Who's a blemish on the face of the earth.
I do it now. Still. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm like, you're not even one of those cool garbage people who have like a job and like.
No, Adam's heard me. Like, I'll go on like a tangent. I'll be like, I'm just a shit person who's on fucking fire, and I smell bad when I'm on fire because the smoke and the fumes. And like, he's just like, what are you even like, doing right now?
So it's like, you get in here, you're like just such a waste of space.
Yeah.
And
that kind of
thing. And even when you do things like, I recently, last May, I got my master's degree, and
nice.
But I still feel like I've been dealing with like switching on my medication and stuff lately. I still feel like it turns into like an imposter kind of a feeling. Like you got that master's degree, but you didn't really earn it. Like,
that's what's in your head.
Yeah. Like I feel like I don't deserve it. It's like they gave you a degree, but
what part of you,
because you don't get it. Like, I don't know.
What part of you feels like you don't really like how you like cheated or like skipped ahead in the system?
I just start feeling like, oh, they just felt bad for you.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, they just felt bad.
So there's nothing actually.
Because you're not good at anything. Okay. And you don't know how to do anything. And that's why, you know, none of your hopes and dreams are going to work out.
Right. And so they're not grounded in anything realistic other than just your own self-doubt. No. Gotcha.
It's just, it's like, I feel like a lot of times people with depression get that kind of imposter syndrome. So it's like, so even when good things happen, you're like,
you don't deserve it.
Yeah. You're like, well, by some miracle, somebody took pity on you, and you know, stuff like that happens. So it really sucks sometimes, because you should be able to enjoy stuff like that. Like, getting an advanced degree is an accomplishment, and I should be like proud of it. Instead, I'm kind of like, I don't want to tell anybody, because then they're gonna like figure me out. It's gonna be like, oh god, how did that happen?
BT Dubs
school.
Elizabeth is an amazing graphic designer. I have her do all of the graphic design for my Red Light Showcase every Sunday at the Avenue Tap House at 7 p.m.
Oh, that's you.
And she's actually going to be
I'm
working on an exciting project that I'm not going to talk about right now, but by the time this airs, everybody will know about. It'll actually probably be happening the week that it airs. Special secret awesome project that she's working on, some graphic design for me. I'm going to be announcing here. If it's coming out that week that it, why do I care? So I'm going to be doing,
no one's listening.
So I'm going to be doing a boast rattle. They're the exact opposite of roast battles, wherein two people just compliment the shit out of each other on stage to the point that it's hilarious and embarrassing and awkward for everybody involved. So I'm going to be having her do the graphic design for it. And she was pitching me some of her ideas the other night, and I was like, pants shittingly excited about like how cool the stuff she had. Cause I literally just, Kyle Ayers is a Chicago based comedian who actually, I think, invented probably, or at least popularized boast rattles. And so I sent her a couple of the flyers that he had created, because they're kind of cute. Like, it's just like cartoon people and like a boxing ring sort of thing.
Like, I'll have
and to. I was like, I want something in this vein because like it is going to be like cute and fun and not as much of like, because we also have the roast battles, which we've talked about, and those are far more like cutthroat and like, so I kind of wanted it to be
more. The anxiety in me just goes like, oh God,
cutesy
oh God.
And like, yo, it's super fun as like a, I think just for like spectating, I think roast battles in general are super fun.
I just saw you posted the one of you in Spider.
Did you watch it?
No, I didn't watch it yet.
Oh, you should watch it. Yeah,
I know. I keep meaning to.
Yeah, you guys have to both watch it because it's, I've watched it 4 times and the thing is, I probably, like most people, hate watching myself. So I'm like, oh, I look fat. Oh, I sound stupid. Yeah. But I watched it 4 times and was like, I just destroyed him. But yeah, so she's doing my flyer for the Bow Straddle, which will probably be happening the week that this airs. So yeah, so if you need some graphic design work done, hit her up because she's really good.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to go into like more like user experience stuff and like Adeline. And that's why it's just kind of a weird field to get into, but I've been kind of like depressed since like then. So it's a little hard to like talk yourself up and try to get like your dream job when you're like,
Do you enjoy like the little projects that like the kind of like the stuff I have you do? Because I don't want to promote you if you're please don't give me your bullshit. I don't want to have to like, I don't have to do this shit.
I'm good either way. Your projects are fun, so.
Good. So you mentioned you stopped cutting yourself when you were 18. Mm-hmm. Was that because you sought help?
Or I wish. That would have been a good move.
You just decided to do so. Like, you just did it of your own volition?
Yeah. I kind of, like, realized that it was just, like, it's not helping. Because we were kind of talking about it before that, like, it really gets you out of your head. And it's just, like it hurts, but, like, that's the kind of pain, like, you can understand. Like, it hurts because I did this. Not, like, there's a chemical imbalance in my brain that I don't get. Mm-hmm. So, it was, I don't know, I guess it was, like, an easy way out sometimes. And it was only, like, a quick fix, you know? It doesn't, like, make you feel better for a long period of time or anything. So, I just kind of, like, it was pointless. So, my best friend at the time and I, we got tattoos on our wrist. It's so dorky. It's the only tattoo I have, and I got when I was 18. And my rule to myself was, like, you get this tattoo, and you can never cut yourself again. Like, it just had to be, like, a completely all or nothing move.
Was that where you used to cut yourself?
Yeah. I definitely go, like, here. So, it's, like, you get it, and you can't. I'm not, like, it's a cross that's black. I'm not a religious person, but I just thought when you know back in the day that it looked cool, and I'm like, was there any blazers and
was there anything specific you just liked the look of like a black cross sort of thing? Okay,
yeah, it's not exactly how I liked. And when I got it, I had like the shakes, and like I could not stop my arm from shaking.
No.
So the edges are kind of stupid.
It looks pretty good.
I'm from a distance across the table.
Seen, but, like, hey.
And a lot of people don't notice it. Like, I like it because people don't. Like, I had
I like the subtlety.
You can easily hide it if you want to.
Yeah.
Do you ever want to get more tattoos?
Yes, but I'm like, I had the shakes the one time. I really need to get like a Cleveland related tattoo.
Me too.
Like a super stereotypical pugnacious Clevelander.
Yeah.
Who has like traveled around the world.
Yeah.
And, like, lived in Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
And when people start saying stuff.
So jealous.
It was super fun. But then
great stories.
Someone says junk about Cleveland and I'm across the world. I'm like, do you want to fight?
You want to go?
Because
you want to go?
Awesome. And I'm going to give you a whole list of like, I've got a German friend. She's like, I am not coming to Cleveland unless you're getting married. And I'm like, I'm going to fake you out.
You'd be like, guess what?
Yeah.
You just buy like a little fake ass cocktail ring. And be like, I said yes.
I just need to get like a gay friend in on it. Like, so it can be super fun.
That's fantastic.
It'll be like my best friend's wedding, that movie. Julia Roberts will like enlist her gay best friend to just like pose as her fiance.
I went to a prom with a gay friend of a friend. I'll see what he's up to. It's so funny.
You'll end up making some straight guy jealous and actually getting married because he'll be like, I never realized I'm in love with her. Like,
and then that turns into a romantic comedy all on its own.
Exactly.
Do you think as a former cutter, you could see yourself getting addicted to tattooing at all? Or do you think that stuff's pretty much behind you?
I think it's pretty much behind me. Only because I'm so indecisive.
Okay.
I think it's not necessarily like you could do it. It would be like, it'd feel good. It's more like,
That's got to be on you forever until you die.
That's why, like, if I got another one, I'm like, and it has to be Cleveland related, and it has to be black, and it has to match, and I think I want it asymmetrical, like, on the top, but, like, it's on my left wrist. I probably get it on my right foot. Like,
okay.
Because I'm just too weird. Like, I can't make decisions.
Well, and you have specific ideas. You're not just kind of like, bah, what the fuck ever. Because, like, the first tattoo I ever got, I was, like, 32. And I got it on my back, and I like it. I think it's pretty. It's a peacock feather, But at the time, I didn't like the way, like, the wispiness of, like, regular peacock feathers. I'm like, draw, like, a real feather, like, a regular feather, but with, like, a peacock. And every time I see it now, like, the OCD in me is like, man, fuck, I should have, like, done something different. So sometime, at some point, I'll probably get, like, an entire cover-up. But, like, I like that, right? You That's actually give it so much thought. See, but yours, yeah, it's so simple. Yeah. And it still says, like, badass. Like, if I see, like, a flash of it, you're like, oh, shit.
I don't have any tattoos, and I have always wanted one. But it was one of the, and there's like a few that I know if I got them, it wouldn't be like a regret or anything later on. But to me, I'm just like, I feel like once you go a certain amount of time, like my good friend Lisa, she's like, let's get matching tattoos. She wants to get like a black ring on our fingers. Like I drew it on I like draw on myself as like a bad habit when I'm like bored. So I drew a black ring and I like to like practice my line work. So I did it, and she's like, that looks amazing. Let's do that. Yeah, and she's like right already covered in tats. So like to her, she's like, well, do you want to go now and get it? I'm like, whoa. Like, buy me a drink first. Like, I don't have like I don't have one tattoo. Like for me to get a random ass like black ring on my finger, like that's
so
a big thing
a
for me.
Subtle way to start.
So as someone with the most amount of tattoos at this table, may I offer some advice?
Yes.
I would strongly discourage hand and finger tattoos.
Yeah, and I know those wear.
Because they wear, and I guess they look terrible when they wear. Because I've actually...
But it wouldn't look like, I don't know.
Half the
I guess if it was just one little black ring.
It's literally one black ring. If I wanted to touch it up, it'd be like
that's
super
thing,
easy
to. And the nice
to.
Part is most places will touch it up for free, like as much as you need to. But I've gone... Like, all the shit that I have on my wrists, which eventually I'm thinking about actually turning into like a fun little charm bracelet. Because I have like I look like fucking Miley Cyrus, like I've got just like the random ass tattoos
little
all over
piece
my
here
wrist.
There.
But it's because I would walk into a tattoo parlor and I'd be like, "Can I get this on my finger?" And they'd be like, "You're not gonna want it on your finger. It's gonna fade. It's gonna hurt."
I mean,
like,
but how long in reality would it take to fade that badly?
Yeah,
like,
I don't
how
know.
Many
they
years?
Seem adamant that it would fade like a shitload. So at some point, like, and that's it. I've got infinite amounts of things that I want tattooed on me. But I just end up getting them on my wrists because
it doesn't hurt as much there too.
You know what? But so like we're talking about like cutting. Mm-hmm. I've always been deathly afraid of pain. Like if someone tells me something's gonna hurt, I'm like, oh my god, I don't want it to hurt. Like I was the kind of kid who when I was told I had to get like my vaccinations, I was like hysterical like,
I was
leading
too,
up to
actually,
it.
For
I got my nose pierced when I was like 27, and the whole time I was like hyperventilating, and my the guy who pierced me was like, you need to calm the fuck down. So I was like freaking out so hard.
But the thing is,
ever since I started getting tattooed. Tattoos, like I am like fearless when it comes to pain because I can't explain, and that's the thing, they always say it's addictive, and I think it's just all the endorphins that get released in your brain.
I think I would get addicted to it,
yeah,
honestly.
I am because
I have a very high
it.
Pain tolerance. And
I think it just felt like a cat scratch.
Yes,
like,
that is literally that is literally
again.
Exactly what it feels like. Because the thing is, as soon as the needle's gone, it doesn't hurt
and
anymore. It's not like
cats,
a burn.
So,
it's not like a sting. It's literally just like
burned
the
crap out of my hand
yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah,
you burned yourself.
Yeah,
what
I
happened?
Was making steak at my mom's house because I make a really good steak, and
she's a good cook.
Thank you.
She made me Japanese curry once, and it was like a cold wintry night, and I was like all snuggled up in like her little Pinterest lovely apartment that's all cozy and sweet. And she literally, I tell this
story
a million times, but it's so amazing. So she invites me over, like she and Anya and I are like all having dinner together. She made this amazing Japanese curry, and she has like this little drink cart set out with an ice bucket with like gin and tonic and soda and white wine and red wine. And all the little, she's got highball glasses, wine glasses, all the stuff set out. And I was like, holy shit, it's a Wednesday night. And I'm just, and there's like limes and lemons.
That's
cut
adulting
off.
Done
it was,
right.
And I was like, I am a shit person. Like,
no,
this person.
I'm just like insane.
Oh,
I think that's
insane.
Why.
It was so
I
amazing.
I
was
like, I really like hosting stuff. And I like, I maybe that's what sometimes I'm
and like, we
but,
haven't.
Like, I get a little high if people say like I'm a good at something, maybe. And I'm just like, I'm going to make this the best.
And we haven't been friends that long, but I desperately just wanted to be like, is it okay if I just curl up on your couch and just like sleep here? It was like so cozy. Like her whole place
is
so
cozy. Oh, God, you should try out my bed next time because I got this gel top foam thing.
Oh, my mom's got one on our guest bed.
I got a foam top and it's...
Everyone who gets up in there, they're like, I want to stay. And I'm like, please don't.
How many bedrooms do you have? Do you have 3 bedrooms in that place?
Two.
Okay.
Yeah. So we've got like a kind of like a big living room. It's like, well, biggish.
Yeah.
It's normal. It's got a normal set and like a tiny kitchen. And then my bedroom is like next to the kitchen, like right across from the living room.
Gotcha.
And hers is down the hall, which is really convenient for sexy times.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Not have. Our super close.
Right. Yeah. That makes,
Yeah.
That's it. Nice. I never actually lived with like just a straight up roommate. So I don't even remember like haven't.
I've never lived with anyone I had to share a bed with, and I don't think I want to because I really hate sharing my bed.
That's like a big thing.
This is mine.
Yeah. I feel like, yeah, sharing a bed, I never like sleep well.
Exactly.
I feel like I'm always aware of the person and just like,
yes,
just like,
remember the time there were three of us in a queen bed and the cats crawled in? There was one night where like me, her, and one of our best friends.
Definitely happened.
I don't even know. Like, were we just drunk? Because I think at one point, like, I was like,
if you're really drunk and tired,
someone will sleep on the couch, and then everyone was like, no, we're all sleeping in the bed.
No, I was on the couch.
Oh, that's right.
You two just like automatically like went to your room, and I was like, but no,
fuck
this. And I just like came in there too, and I was like, let's go over.
And then I have two cats, and they were like, like crawling. So there were like three people and two cats in a queen size bed. And somehow, like, I think
my body temp was very high.
I know, you're so warm.
I felt so gross. I'm like, please, nobody smell. Like,
it's too warm, but so close. I'm like, in my sleep.
Jess, you might have to burn your sheets because I just like sweat so hard.
Yeah, there's so many. And then, like, maybe it's, like, part anxiety, but, like, every time I would just naturally roll over in my sleep, I wake up instead, like, if there's someone else there, because I'm afraid of waking them up.
Yeah.
And then I do roll over, and they do wake up, and I'm like, ah, crap, abort.
You could do what my brother and ex-girlfriend, like, when they moved in together, he and his ex-girlfriend, when they were still dating, they moved in together, but he slept on the couch, and she's, like, they got a sofa bed. I mean, she slept in their bed and he slept on the sofa.
I mean, I have like friends who are married that have
separate bedrooms.
Like, I don't want to have one of those.
Not
like,
even separate beds, separate bedrooms.
I was just like, you each have your own bed.
I
don't
have one of those 50, with like the two like twin beds in the same room.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then when push you want to get risky, you push them together.
Like Mrs. Maisel.
It's weird like mom and pop stuff, but I'm like.
Just like wheels on them.
Like Bert and Ernie have like your initials on the headboard.
I feel like I'm just going to have to like figure out like a king size bed situation or something. Because otherwise I'm going to lose it. But one time I was in a hotel with a boy and we had a king size bed. He slept great. I still was like,
why?
Still too much.
There was someone there.
Where you're like, yeah, still I can hear myself breathing.
They literally have family size mattresses now, which are just two California kings like sewn together. And I
for family sleeping.
And so for joking, I told Adam because my boyfriend's like a giant man. Like he's like
very tall.
6'4". Literally, so last night, and I can't get mad because it's so fucking cute. But like 3:30 in the morning, I wake up. One cat has jumped. I'm like, I'm on my left side facing my boyfriend, and one cat has jumped and jammed herself into my kidneys. So she's like up in my lower back. So I'm like, you know,
stuck,
curved. And then Smithers' favorite thing is to be a hat, and she jumps on her heads, and she'll sleep. Between the pillow and the headboard.
Cat will do that. Yeah. Like, they just want to be like right on top of your head.
So now I have a cat
like,
jammed.
I got you.
Yeah.
I have a cat jammed in my kidneys. So I'm like shaped like the letter S. Then I have a cat on my head, and as she's sleeping, she's kicking because she's having a dream. So she's kicking me in the head. And then Adam literally rolls over and just goes, Kirk. And so I am on my side, and the most amount I have literally like on my side, that's how much space I have because he's taking up.
See,
half the bed,
too much.
The cat in my kidneys is taking up a third of the bed, and then I have something kicking me in the head, and I'm like, this is really funny. Like, it's just hard to be mad, but then I was like, we're going to get a family size bed so that none of this will happen, and I was like, no, who are we fucking kidding? The cats will still
You'll still end up on the side.
Like, we could get a bed the size of, like, my house, and it would still just be like, there'd be a cat on my head, and there'd be a cat in my kidneys.
Yeah, my cat is, like, on, like, anywhere near my, like, core.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like a human heater. And she's like.
And she only sleeps with you, right? Not your roommate?
Yeah. I mean, she's like, she'll sleep in my roommate's bed, but like at the foot of her bed. And then whenever she's in my room, she's like
you.
Up in there. Like, I thought she was going to have a heat stroke the one night.
I had a couple cats who like had to like sleep at the foot of my bed. Like they had to.
Because they were just.
They will break down the door to get to the foot of my bed. Like
my cousin's
cat
does that.
But then I had. I would go to my. One of my old friend's houses, and I'd spend the night over there, like, in high school or something, and they had this, like, 18-year-old black cat, and she had to, every time I was there, she slept right on my chest. Like, I wake up, and we're eye to eye. Every single time. That cat just wanted to be up on my tits.
Aww.
It's like, she was so cute, I didn't care, because I really like black cats, and I think they're super cute. But it was like, just wake up, and, like, cat.
She's like,
yeah, like,
it is it's probably terrifying, right? Yeah, like, especially if you're not expecting it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, hey.
I should have started to just like sphinxing it up on my chest.
I know, like, that's what they look like, little sphinxes.
Oh.
You're just sphinxes. So we get off topic a lot here on the default setting. Yeah. Thank you for
that turned into a crazy
staying.
Cat lady yeah. episode.
For those of you that are still here, thank you for bearing with us.
You're a champ.
Let's go back to talking about depression and cotton ourselves. So meow. That was one of my favorite there's a Debbie Downer on SNL where she like talks about like the cat age statistics and like instead of the womp womp, it's like meow.
I need a cat horn on my phone.
Yeah. She's got the ham horn it like makes like sound effects horn. And shit. Yeah, the hockey horn. Yes, that's right. You heard this already. Hockey horn. Do you have any idea if depression or anxiety runs in your family at all?
I'm pretty sure it does. I feel like my grandma, I just want to shove anxiety pills in her fucking water because she's never going to like go and see it. Like, it's just the way she is. I love her. I love her. But I'm like, sometimes she just like, I feel like there's at least a level of like social anxiety on that side. And my mom has anxiety too. And she's dealt with depression and stuff like that. But back when she was going through it, it was kind of like a hormonal thing. And basically she would try to get help. And the doctors just told her she was like nuts. You know, like back in like the 80s and stuff, they're like, you're
was it like postpartum stuff, do you think?
I think it's actually, yes, please. It's called PMDD, and it's a kind of, it's kind of like getting severe PMS, but like with your hormones. So, gotcha. And I don't remember like too much of it when I was a kid, but sometimes like when my dad would come home from work and she had to like go take a drive or something because, you know, she just had to like get out or, you know, it's stuff like that. Like nothing real intense. Like, I never remember my mom, like, taking the, like,
having
we're
a
all
freak
gonna jump
out.
Off this bridge right now because it's the only
get
way.
Get in the car, kids.
Yeah, like, nothing like that happened. But, like, so she's definitely dealt with stuff like that. And, you know, like, that kind of stuff, maybe, like, on my dad's side that they never, like, did anything with. And, so, I mean, it was, like, here and there. I wish that I would have, like, gotten help and stuff sooner, but you know.
So your mom did try to seek help from doctors and they just like kind of were like, no, you're fine. You're just going crazy.
Basically, and
isn't
then
that what women do?
A couple years later it came out like, oh, PMDD is a thing. Like, oh, now it's got a name and it's got
that
all
kind
this
of stuff
and
pisses
that.
Me off.
Oh, yeah, but there's all those statistics about doctors and stuff, like people in the medical profession not listening to women about like their pain, about any of their feelings,
probably because
about
most of them weren't women,
which
is why I'm like very pro like women
lady
just
everything.
Like taking charge in every area of life because that's what we need, because then we're represented and
definitely it's even now, like if people go to the doctor or something and say they have a condition that would make them infertile, or you could take this medicine that's going to make you feel like crap. And you're like, I don't want to take the medicine. I don't care if I have kids. And they're like, no, you're going to care one day. And then they like make you. It's like, you're not listening to me.
I'd rather have my health than the possibility that I might want to have kids in 10 years.
I will
it's like
adopt.
Yeah, that's so, homes. That's really
Screw
messed
you.
Up.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's all that kind of stuff like that. And
And your grandma's was more focused around, like, social anxiety?
I think that my grandma has some social anxiety and stuff. She just, like, she just starts to, I don't know, I feel like sometimes she gets a little panicky or something. And, like, social situations, she just, like, when she's not in control, and then she'll just, like, I can tell she's starting to, like, freak out. Like, grandma, calm down. There's nothing happening right now.
Spill
Everything
yourself.
Is fine.
No reason to panic.
Yeah. I mean, it never helps to tell her that, which
right,
I know
right.
as a person
it never
with
tells.
Anxiety.
Don't
but,
panic.
Yeah, I know you're freaking out right now, but if you could not, that'd be great.
Yeah,
like that.
That's not ever helpful.
And it never solved anything.
No. Did you say you actually, so you kind of just decided of your own volition to stop the cutting. Mm-hmm. Did you ever seek professional?
I did. I think when I really got like triggered that it was like, no, I really need help. It was actually like after my first like relationship broke up, like I finally decided that, you know what, maybe emotional abusive relationships are bad.
Yeah.
And it was like my first relationship ever, so I think a lot of things, like I was kind of confused and I didn't know what to do, and then it like when we broke up, like I was hit, like it just hit me like so hard, and it's like I didn't even love that person. Mm-hmm. Like why am I just like devastated? Like why is this toward me up so much?
Right.
And then I went to therapy for a little bit, and I think it did help a lot. Like, I feel like I probably could have found a better therapist that was a little bit of a better fit.
Okay.
But it still, like, gave me some more ideas as to, like, oh, maybe this is something else.
Right.
So I'm really glad that I went. And it really helped me with that, for sure. But, you know.
Was that the first time you got medicated for anything?
And then I started going to a doctor. So my primary care doctor. Because for a lot of people who don't know, and I think it's really helpful to know, your primary care physician can prescribe you antidepressant meds. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people don't know that. They think, oh, I have to go to a psychiatrist and stuff. Like, no, your regular doctor can help you out there, which is great. And she's awesome. I love her.
Good.
I go there and I'm like, this one doesn't feel like it's working. Or, you know, this one feels like it's working sometimes or stuff like that. So that was really helpful. So I started taking that. And then when I went to grad school, I feel like I was still getting, like, weird anxiety and stuff. Like, I was totally prepared for class or something, and I would go down, and I went to Kent State, and I commuted from Cleveland. It's like, you know, like an hour, 10-minute drive or so.
Yeah.
And I'd get down there, and all of a sudden I'd be like, I can't walk into that building, and I don't know why. Like, why can't I get out of my car right now? I've got all my stuff. I drove all the way down here, and I'm just too free. Like, I can't. I'm just can't get out of my car.
Yeah.
And so, you know, stuff like that, and I was having a really hard time working on some of, like, my final project stuff and just, like, so much anxiety and everything and, like, couldn't focus. And that's then when I ended up getting diagnosed with ADHD.
Oh.
So, yeah, just throw more stuff in the mix. Yeah, it's super fun. And then, so that's now been, like, helping. It's like, oh, okay, now we can attack this on different levels. And I didn't know, because I would have never thought that I had ADHD because I always had good grades and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Because topics I found interesting, I just got good grades.
Yeah,
in.
Yeah.
It made up for the
same,
like, C's and D's.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other classes. Yeah. So, you know, it's like, well, when I cared, I cared. When I didn't, like, eh.
Right.
So it wasn't, like, school was never really hard for me.
Okay.
So I didn't know, I wouldn't have had any guess. And then the more I was researching, the more I found out, women tend to get diagnosed later in life when it comes to ADHD.
Oh, okay.
And people who have it are, like, 30% more likely to have depression and anxiety. Okay. Just because I think it turns into a whole vicious circle. So,
do you get medicated differently for both? Or is there stuff that
So right now I take, like, an ADHD medication and then I take, like, a depression medicine that's supposed to also kind of help with anxiety.
Okay.
So I just switched it up recently.
Okay.
Because, you know, sometimes all of a sudden it's like, oh man, this week I can't get out of bed and I don't care about feeding myself.
Sure.
That's probably fucked up.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Maybe I'll talk to somebody. I feel like normal people want to feed themselves.
Sure. How often does that happen, would you say?
I think it kind of depends because I've just been... The bitch of, I think, depression and anxiety a lot of times is you don't know what's going to work. Like, there's no, they're not going to take a blood test and be like, oh, we know the perfect medication and the amount for you. And there's so many out there. But it's probably, like, every couple of months or so, depending on if the drugs are working. And it's just, like, a lot of people have different stuff. So sometimes they're like, I have too many feelings and now I just want to, like, eat a whole pizza or something. And then other times it's like, I've got no feelings and I don't care about anything. And if I just lay here and drink water, if I feel like it.
If that.
Yeah, if that.
Do you see someone or talk to someone regularly that can kind of help?
No, but I feel like I should. I mean, other than, like, right now I'm just doing, like, medication stuff and figuring that out. But I just started taking Zoloft, so.
Okay.
I just remember Zoloft as, like, the little circle guy from the commercial.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that? Like, the little sad circle. Uh-huh. Like, bouncing around. I'm like, oh, okay.
I totally forgot about Zoloft. That. But, yeah.
And then there was, like, Abilify, which apparently, like, if your antidepressant wasn't working, it, like, boosted the effects of your, like.
But, well, I don't know. They've never given me that type of, like, aid before.
Yeah.
But, like, this last one, I don't know. Lexapro or something. I would start, like, pharmacy wording it all out.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I was starting to have, like, suicidal dreams.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, this ain't right.
No.
I'm going to the doctor.
Shut it down.
Because I'm like, I don't want to think about sitting on bridges anymore for no reason. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not like a big event happened or something. It was just like, why? I don't want to. No, thank you.
Would you say most of your episodes are not even really event triggered? It's just kind of like you just start noticing that you feel a certain way or they're stimuli.
Probably. Okay. Probably. It's just kind of like sometimes it feels like these meds are super effective and then sometimes it feels like they're not working at all. And it sucks because sometimes when you get something that works and you have like these glimpses of what it feels like to feel like to be like a person and I'm like, oh my God. Is this what people feel like? I was like, oh, fuck, now I've seen the light a couple times.
Yeah.
And I really want it back. Like, I was like, for a little bit, I was like, I can just do anything. I'll figure out, problem solve my way out of everything. Yeah. Like, life is just not, it's fine.
Yeah.
Wing it. Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, it was awesome. And I was just, like, trying to get back to it. And I'm like, no, now I know. Now I know what, like, people feel like. What it feels like to just be a person.
Do you find that, like, it's a sort of cycle of things work initially, and then you kind of have to increase them, and then you have to switch to something else? Or how does it generally work?
I mean, sometimes it's a little bit like that. Like, sometimes, and a lot of times people with depression who have to take meds, you know, you can have something that works for a really long time, and it's great, and then it'll just stop working.
Okay.
And it's like nobody can know. Like, people can have, like, their go-to, like, this has worked for me for 10 years, and then all of a sudden it'll stop.
Yeah.
So I've tried a couple different things, and, you know, my doctor, once again, go to your doctor. Like, if you need it, like, just go to your doctor.
Yeah, yeah.
They're awesome, because they'll work with you, and I'll be like, I think this is working some, but maybe you could be doing more, and then they can, like, up the dosage, or maybe they think you should try something else. Like, it's really important. I feel like people don't do it, but they should. Straight up talk to their doctor.
It's been my experience. Like, so few people are like you that have that sort of self-awareness to step back and say, like, oh, fuck, I have to fix this. I need to increase my dose, or I need to go see someone, or I need to stop cutting myself. Like, the fact that you've had the self-motivation and wherewithal to sort of establish that, like, you need to do something, and then furthermore, doing it, I feel like so many people are, when you're sort of in that zone, you know, you're kind of like drowning. You're not really focusing on what you should be doing.
Yeah. No, it's super hard. Like, it is, it can be like super hard. And it sucks because, like, your family and friends, they don't necessarily get it. And then, like, you don't want to scare them.
Yeah.
You don't want them to feel bad. But at the same time, you're like, oh my God, I can't even, like, talk myself into being, like, a good person. Like, I can't try to make you guys feel better right now about how shitty I feel. Because you guys are nervous. And totally, like, if I had a friend who was feeling like that, like, I would be anxious and I'd want to try to help and stuff.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot you can do. So you really need, like, that person to want to not feel that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which isn't always
easy. Like, that's how it is for so many things, like drug addiction and...
Yeah, you have to really, like, just not want to feel crappy.
Yeah, like, it's like they have to make the decision for themselves.
Yeah.
Which is just such a, like...
Even if they know all of the facts and, like, loved ones come to them and, you know, try and help and are willing to help in any way that they can.
Yeah.
Unless the person is like, okay, I'm ready. They're not going to.
But it also, like, it can make you feel really guilty, too, because you're like, oh my God, now I'm stressing out these people who I care about, and then it makes you, sometimes it just makes you feel worse.
Yeah.
You're like, they want to call me and, like, make sure I'm still alive, and I don't even want to answer the phone for no reason, you know?
You feel like a burden.
Yeah, and it's terrible, and I think sometimes in the past I've gotten into, like, romantic relationships, and definitely, like, the first relationship I had, and where they were depressed, but they didn't want to get help. You know, like, first off, it starts off like everything's fine, and, you know, you don't know it. But then they, like, for me, some of the past relationships, they've been like, well, medication's not for me. Like, other people can take it, but, like, I'm better than that. Or medication and, like, getting help is just going to, like, dull my edge, and, like, what I'm seeing is real, and everyone's screwed up and stuff like that. And because I've been, like, nervous to tell people sometimes, like, when you're in a relationship, that you take medication for something like depression, because people get really judgy, and you don't know what everyone's experience is. And the, like I said, two of the past relationships I've had, they've been like, I'm too good to get help, and I'm like, well, that's dumb, and I'm not.
Well,
so.
I think that speaks volumes about how far gone you truly are. If you're like, yeah, no, I'm God, and, like, you completely are unaware of the fact that, like, you know, how you're being, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like I was like, and I would try to get them to get help. Like, you should go talk to somebody. Yeah. Like, we're in college right now. Go, there's free therapy. Like, go to the office. Go to, and it was like, just find every reason to shut it down. And I'm like, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. I can't be with you being such a drain.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't want to get help, like,
yeah, well, if you're making no efforts.
Yeah, because they thought it was better, you know?
Yeah. There's this huge piece of me where even if I, like, severely doubted that someone, like, you know, someone was like, you need to go talk to someone or whatever, what's it gonna fucking hurt to at least go do it? So that when you, like, you know what I mean? If you go do it and nothing gets better, maybe it's not me, maybe it's you, but at least, like, you can say you made that effort at that point, yeah. That you went and yeah. saw someone, that you tried to get on meds, that you did whatever, and if everything changes, then you've addressed the issue. If nothing changes, then, you know, like I said, maybe it wasn't you to begin with. So I really struggle with the whole idea of, like, I don't need help.
It's really messed up. Like, like you said, like, what's it going to hurt? And why wouldn't you want to try something that might help? You know, like, it's not a guarantee. Sure. But, like, something might make you not feel like
shit. It's not
going to
make it worse.
So.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not like you already are, like, at, you know, the bottom, like, you can't go any lower. Right. You might as well. It's worth a shot. And so much, you know, and so often the excuse is, like, well, I don't have insurance. I don't have money. But, like, there are also infinite amounts of, like, public programs and shit, like colleges often offer, like, you know, people who are in, like, graduate programs or residencies, yeah, that you can go and get free counseling, and they can even prescribe meds on some level that are, like, at a severely discounted price for, like, generic
or, like, medications. I said, like, I think a lot of people don't know that, like, their general practitioner can also help them out. Like,
they don't have to see a specialist. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't necessarily have to find, like, a therapist, psychologist, psychiatrist, like, anyone like that. Like, you can just talk to your doctor.
Yeah.
And especially if it's one that you've been going to, like, they know you.
Yeah.
So hopefully you have one that's good.
Yeah. I think probably the hardest part is, like, when you're that far gone, you lack that ability to take a step back. When you're depressed or you're anxious.
Oh, yeah. It'd be hard to, like, step out of
that. Yeah, you can't really.
But I feel like even when I'm in it, like, really deep and I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to leave my bed because what's the point kind of a thing.
You still have.
You just wait for the world to crash around you. I'm still like, but I don't want this. Okay. Like, you know, I guess I still have a certain, not, and I can't speak to everybody.
Yeah.
But I think, like I said, those, like, past relationships, they were the first one, which was really made me more aware of myself. What, you know, it's like, I feel like sometimes people think they can use depression as, like, a tool.
Yeah.
They're like, no, this is making, and, you know, I gotta say, sometimes when I'm going through, like, a down part, when I do comedy, like, it's almost better. Sometimes only, or, like, job interviews, because I'm like, I don't care if I live or die, so I'm not gonna be nervous about this job interview.
That's a great point.
Because I don't care.
That's a great point.
Living on the edge.
Yeah, it's so stupid. Like, I've had, like, a real smooth job interviews that way, because I'm like, you think that I'm really confident. I actually don't care if any of us live.
I relate to that so hard because, like, I used to be, like, this crazy, I don't want to say hypochondriac, but, like, I would be really, really insane about reading, like, the warning labels on, like, medications and stuff like that. Now it's like, fuck it. Like, I've been through so many, like, suicidal bouts that it's just like, man, like, I'm going to live, I'm going to die. Like, it doesn't fucking, I'm not going to overdose on NyQuil. Like, I just, you know what I mean? Like, it's not.
I love that joke from Scrubs, and it's like, what's the right amount of, like, Advil or Tylenol to give somebody? Okay. Just, like, tell her to open her mouth, take a handful, throw it, whatever sticks. Whatever we get in her hole, like, the right amount.
Well,
that's it doesn't matter.
That's the thing, too. Like, you know, on the warning labels and all these things, like, never take more than 4 Advil in an hour. I have prescription strength ibuprofen. Ooh. That if I took, like, they, like, 1 equals, like, 6 ibuprofen, which you're allegedly not supposed to do.
I would do that.
It puts me in la la land every single time. And that's the other thing too, like,
that's great for a hangover.
How far, oh my god.
And it just makes you feel no pain.
It saved my life so many times from hangovers. But, like, furthermore, like, it just makes you wonder, like, at what point you have to get when you start getting into, like, the hard shit, like Vicodin and Percocet and all that stuff. Like,
I'll take 6 Advil if I got bad cramps or something.
Right, and
like,
that knocks it right out.
Like, I'm not about
that. I'm completely immune to Vicodin.
Really?
Mm-hmm. From when I was in college, I got super depressed. And when I get upset, like, emotionally, I will get sick instantly. Like, my immune system shuts down. Ooh. It's, like, very, like, hand in hand.
Yeah, like, stress and stuff that really does that.
And I was in college at CSU at the time. And I just,
like right off the bat got like terrible bronchitis, and I had it for months. Bronchitis, pneumonia, like on and off. And literally, like, I barely remember that year of college. Like, I don't know how I didn't fail out. And like, I was coughing so violently that like I would collapse on the floor of like my mom's house and just black out because I was in so much pain and like they thought I cracked a rib and stuff. Yeah, I was on so much Vicodin. Like, I literally, like, if I took it semi-recently for some reason. Oh, I think it was, like, something with, like, from the dentist or something.
Yeah, they usually do.
And I was just, like,
it didn't even help with the pain at all?
No.
Okay.
I mean, it did a little, like, as if I popped, like, a couple ibuprofen. Yeah. But it was, like, it's kind of weird.
That's kind of terrifying. I'm glad you didn't get, like, hooked. No, yeah. Those things are allegedly, so habit forming.
I don't have an addictive personality, like, thankfully.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, like, just one of those weird things.
It's, yeah, and
drugs are
like,
scary sometimes.
They're weird.
So what I personally hate, and maybe this is just me, we were just talking about this before the show, I've never done coke in my life.
I'm going to love it.
The
so
hardest
hard.
Drug I've ever done in my life is Molly, and I've done it twice. And like even then, I felt fucking nothing because I think I'm one of those people, I had to do marijuana. Like, I do marijuana.
Yeah, I just smoke me a joint.
I just smoke a doob, like, probably 12 times before I felt anything because I think it just needed to build up in my system that much.
Yeah, I've tried pot, like, several times because I want to like it. Like, I really want to like it because I enjoy drinking. And
which
I'm
is
like,
why we're drinking instead of smoking on this episode.
Yeah. I don't like it. Like, I start to get that feeling and then I'm like, nope, weird.
Well, and you've had some bad.
And, oh, yeah. One time my friend thought she killed me on rapper weed because I was like... It was like 2 hours. I was curled up in the fetal position. Like,
you just shut down.
I was twitching and I went all white on my face except for my eyelids turned gray.
Ooh.
I remember she like poked me in the eyelid because she was like, "Are they like, what's going on?
Thought you were dead."
Yeah, she was trying to get me to the hospital and I'm like, "No!" And I was just picturing really creepy things happening like every couple seconds. And I was, like, in my mind, I was going over a weird place. Like, I had my eyes, like, glued shut this whole time. Mm. Like, in the fetal position.
Are you sure there wasn't something else?
Yeah.
No, because they were fine. Like, they were totally fine. Like, my friends, they're, like, you know, classic stoner kids from college days. They were, like, took a couple hits, and it was, like, it was a joint. Because I'm bad at smoking bowls because I don't get it.
Yeah, it's a practice.
My hands are too shaky for those. So my friend Missy makes fun of me.
Oh, I've lit my fingers on fire so many times because I didn't realize you had to inhale while you let the bowl to suck the fucking thing in, flame. And so, like, Adam had to teach me, like, oh, no, you're actually supposed to suck in so that you don't burn your face. But, like, the thing is, as much as, like, I have never really dabbled much in illegal narcotic substances, I am 100% about don't be a fucking hero. There's medication. There's modern medicine for a reason. Like, I have known so many people who'd be, like, in excruciating pain, and I'm like, here, take one of my prescription ibuprofen. No, I don't want to get hooked. I don't want to build up a tolerance. Like, it is one fucking thing, and you have a second-degree sunburn. Shut the fuck up and take a fucking...
I gave one of those prescription ibuprofen to my best friend when she, like, had a hangover or something, and she's like, oh, my God, this is the stuff of miracles.
Oh, my God!
She's like, this is amazing.
And it's
like,
just ibuprofen.
Christ.
Like, no one's
I
ever
I just
got
take
addicted.
Ibuprofen. Like, if I'm out drinking, take ibuprofen and chug water before I go to bed. Wake up, have McDonald's breakfast with a Coke.
Yes!
Bam! Shut it down.
Shut it down.
All natural remedy.
Hey, who wants to hang out? I'm totally fine now. An hour later, my cousin and I like swear by it.
That's awesome.
I was in Japan. I would like come home and then I'll like drink some water and some Advil PM because I'm the kind of person like who when I'm hungover, like I will wake up
can
like,
you
before
get,
the crack of dawn.
Yeah,
can
me
you get
too.
Advil and shit in Japan because one thing I noticed.
Oh no, I brought that with me.
I was gonna say one thing I noticed is like it's Eastern medicine over there. So like I got a cold really bad when I was over there.
You have to take the powder.
Oh, it's not. No, I didn't take anything because I was like, I went in. I'm like, oh
no,
they don't have drugstore. They have tea. Like they
no,
have fucking
no, no,
tea.
They do. They
do. They?
Yeah, they've got stuff like that. They're not cool with stuff like NyQuil.
Okay.
And things like that. I don't know. Like I don't got my Advil PM
like
over there.
Stuff you can get like drunk off of if you wanted to.
Yeah, yeah maybe it's like that.
I mean, they drink sake, so it's not like they're totally against. I'm all about sake.
But I, when I was there, like when you, I had gotten like stomach aches and stuff. Yeah. And a lot of their medicine, it's like, it's a powder.
Yeah.
It comes in like a little pouch. Alka-Seltzer,
sort
of. Yeah. It comes in a little pouch of just like ground up powder. And you just got to like toss it in the back of your throat and then like take a swig of water. Chaser. One time I was sick and like a... I think we were like got off the train and went to like a in a drugstore and I'm like I have to throw up.
Oh no!
I wasn't hungover. Like I think I was like legit sick. And then we went into the drugstore and they're like, "Here's this powder." And I'm like, "The fuck she say to me?" She's like,
"Wrong answer."
I don't like. I'm not the kind of person like I don't like nasty shots. I don't like liquid medicine. Like I was a 5-year old asking if I could just take a pill. Yeah. Like don't make me bubblegum medicine my ass. Yeah. That stuff tastes terrible.
When I discovered like the Pepto-Bismol pills when I got older, I was like,
yeah. So much better.
I take Gas X for everything because it comes in a pill. Any kind of stuff. I don't care if the stomach ache is like gas. I don't care what it is. Yeah. I will only take Gas X.
Okay.
So it's got the peppermint oil in it. And then at you.
Like, I recently started peppermint burps. I started getting the chewable Tums, like the chewies.
Okay, that's better because I won't take the chalky ones.
They're delicious. Because the chalky, like gummy. Like, well, they're not gummy, but they're like they're almost like taffy.
Taffy. I've heard those are pretty good.
Oh, they're so much better because that's the thing. I've had acid reflux since I was probably like 11, and I've been taking chalky ass Tums since then. Like,
that make your tongue all white.
I get acid from everything. So like when I found out there were like these taffy Tums, like it's bad because like I'm glad I discovered them when I was like an adult because I was a child. I'd be like, "Ma'am, can I have some Tums?"
There's a funny story. Brother and I almost OD'd on Flintstones vitamins back in the day.
We should not have made those so good.
We were standing on the stove to get to the cabinet above, and we both just ate a ton of Flintstones vitamins, and then they had to like give us Epicac.
You serious? Oh my god!
Because you can get iron poisoning.
What?
So they gave it to my brother first. Mistake number one, because I saw what it did. And then my mom had to get like the neighbor over, and I am like laying like crucifixion style in the middle of the kitchen floor while they pin me down and put Epicac down my throat.
Oh my god!
It was ridiculous.
Wow!
It's like the fucking Exorcist, except they had to get like. The power of Christ compels you, and like Fred Flintstone comes flying out of your body.
I remember like my mom's on one arm, neighbor lady on the other arm. Like
that is intense.
You have to take this.
I never even really thought about like kids doing that.
Yeah, don't make your vitamins so good.
But they're eating Tide Pods, so
yeah, true.
Yeah.
True.
Kids.
I could have gotten iron poisoning, but at least I wasn't gonna die of fucking Tide Pod. Kids, but you know what? Days. Like Darwin, just take them.
I know.
Darwin, we were just talking about that.
Yeah, you're gonna be fucking stupid. What are you gonna do?
Take that kid.
We gotta wrap this up, but I want to thank our guest Elizabeth Steeman for being here. This is super fun.
Yeah,
do this for
kind
like 16 hours. No. Oh my god, no. You've heard this podcast. Like,
how dare you?
I
guess I'm used to like when I have to talk to like friends and stuff, they're just like, they don't want to hear about
just
it.
Talking about like depression and cutting.
No,
and
it's
like,
funny because like I was so stupid. I hate myself, but it's funny, it's hilarious.
And here's the time that I OD'd on Flintstone vitamins.
And then you almost get yourself on Flintstone vitamins.
Yeah, then you OD on Flintstone vitamins.
Yeah, see, I was suicidal.
Don't try it home, kids. Don't try it home. Although, if you're going to try to OD on something, let it be Flintstone vitamins instead of, Vicodin.
Your mom's going
to
come after you with some Tide
Pods. Because I'd rather have iron poisoning than, like, whatever the fuck. Call the fucking toxic.
Yeah,
whatever control. Center, poison control. Yeah. Geech, where can we find you on social media?
You can find me on Instagram at ggchick, g.g.chick.
You can find me at epicfaul, epicfaul, on the Instagram and Twitter. You can also find me every Sunday at 7 p.m. at the Avenue Tap House in Lakewood, Ohio for the Red Light Showcase. First Sunday of every month is open mic. Last three Sundays are going to be showcase. And if bow straddles work out. We might have the last Sunday of every month do bow straddles. Elizabeth, is there anything you have coming up towards the end of March that you want to promote at all? Or do you have a social media that you want to promote?
I have a website.
Okay.
It's elizabethseaman.com. That's all it is. I'm not super creative.
S-E-M-A-N.
Yeah, it's the singular version.
So if you put Elizabeth Seaman, you might get a different website that is probably not the one that you wanted, but could still be just as interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't remember.
It's like you're looking up Dick's Sporting Goods, and you're like, you got to be real careful about what you put in.
Yeah, I don't
know. To look that up. I got to thank OK Pants at OK Pants on all of the social media for doing our logo. Pete Milk, Milky Way Recordings for recording us and making us sound not terrible.
Thanks, Pete.
Above Below Entertainment and Lousy Weather Media as our networks. I'm thinking for our sound effects today, because we were talking about it earlier, we could do the sad meow. Like, we were really talking about doing the Debbie Downer meow, where it was like, meow, meow. So we could just all do that.
That sounds good to me.
Do it on three. All right. One, two, three. Meow, meow. Okay, love you. Bye.